This week on the Finding Impact podcast, we're talking about the ins and outs of iterative product testing with David Hennier of Eneza.
FindingImpact.com. FindingImpact.com. Helping you scale your social business.
Hey everyone, my name is Andy Narricott and I'm the founder of Finding Impact, the show with an audience of real social entrepreneurs creating solutions to poverty and who want to learn from people who've done it before, who've got some war stories to share and want to pay it forward with some crucial advice to the rest of the social enterprise community. Today I'm interviewing David Hennier on iterative product testing. David's thought about this long and hard, so I'm pleased that we're going to dig into this topic with you. This is the first of a three-part series on knowing your customer better. So our next episode will be on marketing at the base of the pyramid and then another to follow. So make sure you check out episodes 83 and 84. Okay, before we jump into it, I just wanted to mention that we're actively looking for sponsorship partners for Finding Impact. If you know of anyone who is in the game of supporting social entrepreneurs, then please introduce us. It's andy@findingimpact.com. We're looking for sponsorship partners to co-create content with, dive into challenges that would benefit their cohort of social entrepreneurs, and hear from social enterprises that have important lessons to share. So don't forget, my email address is andy@findingimpact.com, and I look forward to hearing from you. Okay, ladies and gents, let's get straight into it. Hi everyone, I've got David Hennier here. We're going to do an interview about building an iterative product testing platform. So a bit of background, David is the lead developer at Eneza Education in Nairobi. Eneza delivers educational content to students on all mobile devices, including via SMS and USSD. So really base the pyramid stuff. And theirs is a subscription model, so roughly 10 shillings a week, which is super affordable. And for the last 2 years, David has been teaching other staff members and his team about in his organization about how to design and run experiments on product features, pricing and marketing campaigns. So excited to dig into this with David. So welcome, David Hennier.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's good to have you on the show. I think from your Twitter page, I think you're a fellow Harry Potter fan. Is that right?
Oh, I'm a huge fan of Potterhead. Are you?
I am as well, but my kids are even bigger. What we're going to talk about is product testing process that you lead at Eneza. I think what the goal of this episode is to help entrepreneurs build their own product testing methods. So first off, I mean, from your perspective, what are the essential elements that any company needs to develop or have a product testing platform?
Okay, so I think the reason why I think having a product testing platform is important for any company is I fundamentally believe that a startup or an organization is one massive experiment. So that means you are basically organizing everything you have around proving whatever problem you're trying to solve or value you're trying to add. And I think once you have that mindset from the beginning, it becomes really easy to set up whatever you need to do in your organization for it to succeed.
Yeah.
And then from there, it's just a matter of a couple of processes and tweaks and semantics. But I think that mentality is really, really important at first.
Yeah. And you're trying to understand your customer base as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. So because you are, you are either trying to solve a problem or add value to your customers in one way or another, you do need to understand a lot of who they are and what exactly you're giving to them. I think another thing that's important to understand is at what stage of your company is at. So, for instance, for Eneza, when we began this process, we already had a good understanding of who our customers are and what product works really well for them. So right now we're in 3 countries, and that means we're currently in the growth phase of Eneza. And in that stage, the things you need to do are very different from when, for instance, you're at a very early stage. So even the things you need to organize within your organization for you to run successful experiments could be slightly different. And that's just something else to keep in mind. Yeah.
All really just to sort of test ideas, right? Test hypotheses. I mean, is that the basic goal of product testing?
Yeah. So it's that plus also, I think, the biggest thing you'll come across and one of the biggest problems that we came across at Neza is you have all these ideas that you want to do. And they'll come from everywhere. They'll come from your customers. They'll come from yourself. They'll come from internal teams. And they'll all be trying to, again, achieve whatever you're trying to achieve. But without organizing yourself in a way that you can learn from your experiments or learn from your ideas, if you don't find a way of creating a rhythm around that, then it becomes a problem. So the goals of building an experiment process or an experimentation process is, again, to achieve a sense of constant learning. So that's learning from your customers, from your data, from your history, creating a sense of rhythm around the learning, so building a cadence on the learning, and creating a sense of autonomy for your teams to learn from this and to run the experiments, and also a sense of accountability. So when an experiment fails, what do you do and how do you move forward with that?
And you mentioned as well about that filtering out all these different ideas that are coming from the organization. You've got to make sure that they're all aligned with the core company goals. Is that right? How do you ensure that's the case? I mean, that you're not just testing everything.
Well, to be fair, I think to some degree you will end up testing quite a few things. I think I'll walk with an example. A couple of years ago, just before I started this process, Eneza organized something called an R&D team. And the goal of the R&D team was to basically combine efforts from marketing, from engineering, content, and other teams to reduce the silos that exist between those teams. And that team was set up to work on initiatives that led us to understanding a lot more about our users and therefore to build better tools and services for them. So when we were doing this, we'd go out to this field, we'd go to students in a classroom and we'd talk to them, we'd work with them, we'd run a couple of observations and simple paper prototypes and a bunch of other simple techniques to learn from them. But that meant eventually, as much as we were coming up with lots of very interesting ideas and things that are feeding back to engineering for engineering to build, we came up to a point where we had way too many things that we were working on, and we had very few resources to work on them. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, not all ideas are equal. Not all suggested solutions to problems are equal. And also, not everything that people are suggesting are solving the problems they claim
solve. You need to prioritize, right? I mean, how do you do that?
Okay, so that's fantastic. So the thing then that we did around this would be to come up with all the ideas that people come up with. A good way to do that is just to make sure that you're collecting them somewhere. And like one of the processes we set up at Eneza was just to make sure that we collect all these ideas and we have a session on a Monday morning or something where we just pick up a problem that someone suggested or solution someone suggested and try and go down to the root problem that needs to be solved. So one very good example we had was early on, there was this problem where someone noticed that we were having users stuck in a particular part of the system. Some of the metrics we were observing, the activation or the acquisition metric, it wasn't at the level that we wanted it to be at. Someone realized that people were getting stuck in a particular part of the system. So what would happen, I think it was a customer care team. They would call some users and they would help navigate them from this part to where we needed them to be for them to move on successfully. And the thing they learned was, or the thing they observed was, for them, this worked if they spoke to the users in Swahili. And so what happened was, there was this huge request that came to the engineering team, I think the R&D team at the time, which was, could you guys please prepare some mock-ups or make sure that we change the entire app's language from English to Swahili, especially for our Kenyan users.
Which is a huge project, right?
Yeah, it's immense. I mean, where would you start with that? I mean, it's a bit crazy. And the amount of time it'll take engineering and marketing and customer care to organize around this, it's just immense and it's really, really expensive. Yeah, and that's the thing. So there you have a problem that's very expensive to achieve. It'll take on too many resources and you don't even know if it'll achieve the impact that you want. And that's an excellent candidate for running an experiment. And so what we did was just a few of us from the different teams, we spent some time identifying what's the problem here, what are we trying to achieve, what's the reach, and what's the impact you expect to achieve here. So again, the point here is to step away from thinking about the solution and to step back and talk about the problem and what you think you're trying to solve and how you think you're going to solve that particular problem. And from there, even one suggested solution could come up with multiple problems you're trying to achieve. And that's a good place to be, because from there, you can now pick up the problems and build experiments around that. And if you're able to do that successfully, you'll be solving a lot more problems down the line than trying to solve, to build one solution and you don't know whether it'll actually solve the problem that you want it to solve.
Yeah.
Can you, does in your, make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a great example. You know, you're basically, you know, got this funnel of ideas all going to a central point where you can methodically look at the, you know, evaluate those ideas, dig into the core of the root cause of the problem, and then have a proper process to evaluate different solutions against the preset criteria. This is fantastic. I mean, who in the organization is involved in this process? Who owns it and who's involved as it goes through those steps?
Okay, so that's changed very much over time. So like I said, initially we had an R&D team and that constituted members of marketing, engineering, customer care, content, and a few other teams. And we just had a product, a leader for that. And now I think that evolved to now we have a dedicated product team and the product team has a dedicated product manager and they're responsible now for making sure that this runs smoothly amongst the other activities.
Okay. So product team led by a product manager, and who does the product team deal with? Who do they relate with?
They are basically, product is basically the interface between all the different teams. So they sit in the middle of everyone. So they work with engineering, they work with sales and marketing, so the business teams, they work with the customer care teams. They basically are the representative of the customer in the organization. Their job is to work hard to make sure that the customer's needs are met, and we are all moving towards a shared vision of providing the right product for the company or for the customer.
So when you have this process, which is being owned by the product team, and what some of the common mistakes you're seeing around this being made in this process?
I mean, I think initially the biggest one was basically not having an owner for the process. So one of the biggest pitfalls that happens, and I think it's common with everyone, is you want to get to the solution immediately. So that means that you'll say something like, yeah, we need this particular app to change from English to Swahili. And it doesn't matter if anyone else on the team is on the same page. We just need to get it done. And it makes sense depending on how urgent you feel the problem is and how important you feel it is. But the point of having a product team or having even a process around filtering the ideas and the hunches is to help everyone make sure that we are prioritizing things based on how important and urgent they are and based also on the reach and the impact and the effort it will take for us to build or for people to build. So, I mean, even for me, I do fall into the trap of, for instance, saying, oh, I think this is the solution. And because I'm an engineer, I'll just pull up my code editor and build it and deploy it and eventually realize actually you made a huge mistake and we just end up having more engineers supporting the mistake that you built. So it happens. I think respecting the process is really, really helpful and really essential to anyone.
And you know, any other pitfalls that for people to watch out for? Maybe, you know, people changing experiments or needs halfway through the project or something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I if I was just quickly run through the whole process, like of doing an experiment, I think that might help.
Yeah. Go through those steps. Yeah. Product testing steps.
Okay, cool. So the first step again is to brainstorm the problem, not the solution. And once we have a bunch of problems, we prioritize those problems. And prioritization here tends to be something you can use the common, typical prioritization techniques that exist out there. So a quick Google search will give you prioritization techniques. One that I like to use that's very easy to use is something called the RISE score. And RISE basically stands for reach. So how many customers will the project impact or the test impact? That's how, that is how big of an impact is this? Like, is it massive or high or medium or low? How confident are we about our estimates, and how much effort will it take for us to achieve this? And the effort could include, for instance, how many people do you need for this to be achieved and how much time will it take? Prioritize your problems, come up with a hypothesis, something like, if I do this, then this will happen because I observed X, Y, Z, and success will look like ABC, and it will be measured by QRS. So in the Swahili example that I'd mentioned earlier, one simple hypothesis we came up with was, we believe that changing this menu, the registration menu from English to Swahili, will reduce, drop-off? Because users don't understand the English menu. So the metric we're observing here was some acquisition or activation metric, and we wanted to see if it would move up. And I think there was a percentage movement we were observing at the time. So from that, what we do is to build something called a minimum viable test. And this tends to be another problem. The other pitfall that I come across, or I've seen people come across even now, even today. And that is, once you've identified the problem and the hypothesis you have, believing that the experiment is something that needs to be built over a month or 2 months or 6 months or 3 months. And you most definitely don't have that time. So the goal here is to build such a tiny experiment, so a minimum viable test, that it will measure the metric, the exact metric that you want to measure, or the exact outcome you want to measure. And you can almost run that independent of other teams, and it can run for a week or two. So the thing to look out for here is to make sure that you don't need too many other resources from other teams, because that's expensive. And it'll take about a week or two for you to measure your results.
Let's go back to that Swahili example. How did that look, that minimum viable test?
So what we did here was we split the Swahili menu to multiple experiments. So we did one A-B test. And the beauty about this is, at Inez, we'd already set up a very simple A-B testing platform that's anticipating for things like this. And what we did was, we basically asked one member of the content team to help us translate one tiny section of the registration process. A part we identified by looking back into our data that we had a huge number of people dropping off at this point. So we went back to that point, identified that, changed the language like one or two sentences there, and basically made it that half of the new users who got there would see the English version and the other half would see the Swahili version. And we just observed that for like a week or two. And again, like I said, there was a metric we were looking at. And that's a very simple thing. We don't need to build anything more complicated than changing two lines, two sentences on your platform. And again, the hypothesis here was, if we saw a higher conversion from the Swahili one, then you could, again, run more experiments by changing other parts of the app slowly over time. And we'd have this incremental change of the parts of the system that we noticed that needed this change to switch from English to Swahili. And by the end of it, we realized actually there wasn't much of a difference between English and Swahili, and we figured there was no need for us to change it, which was fantastic for the engineers, because they didn't need to focus a lot of their energies building an entire Swahili app or whatever over time.
So running these minimal viable tests with and measuring the success based on KPIs that you've kind of agreed and beforehand with the product team, so you can actually see how it goes, and you can all, you know, there's no ambiguity about whether or not it's working or not. You've agreed those KPIs and examining the results of determining whether success or failure, and then you're just obviously keeping very close contact and coordination and communication with your product team in the whole way through, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. So I think another thing that needed to happen here was to create a sense of visibility towards the metrics. So we, part of the A-B testing platform has a very simple way of the internal teams tracking the metrics on a day-to-day basis. So they don't have to wait until the experiment is over for them to see the final results. They can log in anytime and see what's currently going on, which experiment is running, and what are the results of that. So that's pretty useful for anyone. And again, it creates a sense of visibility and accountability to the rest of the team, and they can even trust the process a lot more. So that's something else that's really important to do.
Mm. Who else are you involving in this process? I mean, it's just the product team and engineering, or are there some other gatekeepers involved to ensure that, you know, deploying the, you know, resources in the right way and, you know, very much aligned with company goals?
Okay. I mean, at this point, even the engineers are almost not involved. It's really other teams. It's almost every other team that isn't involved in building this particular feature. So it's mostly the people who are mostly affected by the need of the change. So, for instance, we might have a representative from the customer care team, from the marketing team, from the content team. So it really is other teams that are involved in the entire process. They are the ones who come up with the problems, are the ones who identify the minimum viable test. They are the ones who own the entire process from the beginning to the end. So my job here was mostly to make sure people understood what they were doing and not for me to run the test themselves.
And who has the final say in your organization about what goes into engineering to be worked on and maybe finally developed?
Oh, so that's a combination of the product team and for instance, like the engineering, some of the senior members of the engineering team. So that could be the CTO and the head of product, or it could be someone like me and the product manager.
Yeah, what does that look like? Is that a weekly meeting, or is that, you know, done in another way? You know, people have to pitch their ideas. I think that happens at Google or something, you know.
No. Well, there's a weekly meeting with the engineers where we come up with what's going to be built in the next sprint. So we use Agile methodology to organize the way we work. So
sorry, what methodology?
Agile. I'm so sorry.
Agile
is a way of breaking down big tasks that tend to go about 6 months, I think, to activities that can be worked on within a week or two. So it's breaking on large tasks to about 1 or 2 week activities, which you might call sprints, by the end of which we'll be working closely with the customers or other stakeholders of the feature or the product, with the goal of eventually creating this iterative process of building a product, or building a feature. So it's very much trying to break down the 6 month work of here's your list of requirements, these are the stakeholders, and making that a 2 week process with constant feedback and involving as many stakeholders as possible. Mm. As part of this, before we begin a sprint, which is one of these 1 or 2 week activities for the engineering team, there tends to be a session where the product manager or someone from the product team and someone from the engineering team go through what's in the current engineering backlog and what's in the current product backlog, or activities that have come from any product activities that engineering needs to build. And that's when there's this alignment of activities and goals.
Mm, okay. Thinking about sort of feedback loops, how does data contribute to changes in product design and marketing within your organization?
Okay, so I think Inez is very data-driven in the sense that almost everyone in the company, before they present a particular idea that they feel needs to be changed, it almost comes with some form of data or metric. So there are lots of data points that the engineering team has set up, and we send some data points to tools like Mixpanel, and we have other data dashboards that we've set up. So I think it's almost like become culture, part of the culture, where someone will come and say, I have seen like a drop off in X in this amount of time, and I'm wondering what's going on. So there's almost never a sense of, oh, I think it'll be a good idea for us to build this just because I feel it is. That's almost ignored. Almost nobody takes that seriously. I think for someone to present an idea, even to the R&D, to the product team, it almost always comes with some form of data point. It just becomes a question of whether that data makes sense, or whether there's some way of refining the collection methods and everything else around that.
Did you mention, you said you use tools like, did you say Mixpanel? Was that one?
Yeah, so we use Mixpanel. So Mixpanel is a very simple... Mixpanel is a third-party application. So it's a... How do I define it? So it's a data analytics platform. And basically what we do, or what they do, is you give them some data points, and Mixpanel then create this, they have this algorithms that just go through your data points, and they'll come up with some forms of predictions and analysis of your data. And they'll give you some beautiful charts and diagrams and, an analysis of that. So it's, yeah, so they do that. That's an independent app. And what the engineering team then did is just make sure that we send certain data points of a user's interaction on the platform to Mixpanel, and other team members can pull data points from that. But that's only one point. I mean, there are other places on the app internally. There are some other internal tools we've built that allow into other teams to fetch data points, to get the same data points.
And for Eneza, what does that mean? What give me some typical data points that you're talking about? Because it's a very data-rich social enterprise, because you're obviously a tech company.
Yeah, so we have about 4.9 million users so far. So yeah, and we get about a million messages exchanged every day. So it's too much. So one of the things we've done is we have this thing we call an API, which is basically, it doesn't just do API stuff. One of the things it does is it provides a reporting tool. And some of the data points we might, for instance, get would be, we can track every user's messages today. We can track every step that a user makes from the time they registered onto the platform to where they currently are. So we have like a trail of breadcrumbs on the app that we're tracking for each user. And those are visible on the reporting tools that we have set up. So for instance, you can tell, like when I say that in the Swahili menu, we could tell where someone got stuck. So that's one of the data points we were tracking, some of these breadcrumbs. So we could go back and see, people dropped off at this particular point and they hadn't begun interacting with this other feature. And you could tell precisely when they dropped off. And then the question becomes, why did they drop off there? And that's where we start building a hypothesis around the problem we've observed.
And I think it just occurs to me that, you know, it's such a huge data set you're generating with over 4.9 million users. And, you know, we're just having such rich data because you're tracking steps through a web application. But for just thinking for other companies, maybe in agriculture or in sanitation or something, you have to create those data points yourself if it's a physical product, a physical service, and become more like a tech company in a way, to just measure everything. As long as it's not, I mean, it's going to be a little bit of a burden, but it just gives you such a rich understanding of your business, and you can look at those numbers and then make predictions, or you know, make a hypothesis of what you're seeing in that behavior of how that of the data that you're seeing. So this is just making that analogy to other businesses, for other businesses to understand.
Yeah, 100%. I think also the thing to, I think one of the advantages of any company that doesn't have too much data is they have the opportunity to define the data points they want to track and to create even models around that. Because one of the problems with having too much data is you can get lost in the noise, because you're like, which data point is important and which one isn't? And we have had those problems at Eneza as well, where we have to try and filter and figure out which one makes sense and which one doesn't. So even for an agricultural company or a sanitation company, there are things that they're able to track. Like, it could be the first time they make contact with a customer, the amount of time it takes for them to make a sale. I mean, I'm sure most people already have these things. So it's just a matter of taking those particular data points. And there are already existing models on how to calculate what does a good customer acquisition cost look like, what's a good customer lifetime value look like, and what does that translate to for my particular product or my particular business. So those already exist. It might be a bit manual to collect, but they already exist, and it's possible to play around with those and to build experiments around them as well.
Yeah. Can you feed that sort of offline data that's manually collected? Can you feed it into an application like Mixpanel and have it do all sorts of predictions and visual analysis for you? Or is there other software more suitable?
I don't know about Mixpanel, but I think even using an Excel document or Google Sheet is very possible to do the same thing. I mean, Mixpanel does a fantastic job when you have huge data points and you need to do some form of complicated analysis. But if you just want to find out what my unit economics looks like, and you can calculate your customer acquisition cost or your customer lifetime value, and you do that for like a quarter, I mean, you already have some decent data to work with there to run your own models and analysis. What Mixpanel is, it's just that same thing that you're doing on Google Sheets or on an Excel document. They just pump that full of steroids and have servers running behind the scenes to do the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just from my previous interactions with other social enterprises, some people use Salesforce which you know, it's a frontline data collection tool when you're talking to customers. But also, I'm assuming you can also feed in other aspects like from financial data associated with customers as well, plus ordering and supplies and inventory and that sort of stuff. But really, really brilliant. I mean, and I like how we've, you know, related this conversation back to low tech environments with other social enterprises. So brilliant. Thank you very much, David, for your time. We're drawing to a close. Where shall we direct our audience to find out a bit more?
Right. So go to enezaeducation.com and you'll see quite a lot more about Eneza. We are currently looking for developers, so that's something I'm just going to pitch up there. And if you're in Kenya and you have a Safaricom line, dial *291#. I think that's Kenya and Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire. Dial *291# on your mobile phone. And that's it.
*291#. All right. Brilliant. Thanks very much, David. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Andy. And have a good one.
And that was David Henia of Eneza. Thank you, David, for speaking to me about creating an iterative product testing platform and about organizing all those ideas that come into your organization and prioritizing and then how to deal with them before they get to engineering. You don't just create everything that comes into you, but you actually have a way of thinking about this methodically and utilizing those scarce resources in a smart way. Make sure you tune in next week when we'll be talking about marketing to the base of the pyramid. I'm very excited about this one. So make sure you tune in. Okay, thanks everyone for listening. Have a great week.
FindingImpact.com. Helping you scale your social business.